Before anyone sees him cross the river, the real decision has already been made. It does not arrive in a burst of drama or a grand declaration, but forms gradually under pressure as options narrow and each alternative begins to carry its own danger. By the time Julius Caesar approaches the Rubicon, the crossing is no longer the beginning of the decision, but the moment when that decision becomes visible. For years, distance had protected him. In Gaul, success created its own momentum, each victory strengthening not only his reputation in Rome, but the loyalty of the men who fought beside him. What began as command had become something more personal than office, and more durable than political favor. Now, that success returns with him as a problem.
Welcome to the Mammoth in the Room podcast, where we share real-life stories about leadership and their underlying human behavior rooted in science and research. We unpack and interpret the evolutionary forces behind it to help you to better lead your people for outstanding business results.
Welcome back to the Mammoth in the Room, where we explore leadership lessons that stand the test of time, using history and neuroscience to explain the human behavior behind pivotal decisions. Because those same patterns still shape how leaders and teams succeed or fail in organizations today. I'm Nicholas Pocorni, CEO of Mammoth Leadership Sciences. In the last episode, we followed Julius Caesar through Gaul, where military success gave him more than victories. It gave him stature, loyalty, and a form of credibility that no office in Rome could fully contain. By the time we left him, his power had grown too large to fit comfortably back inside the system that had once tried to manage it. And that is where episode 5 begins. The problem facing Rome is no longer whether Caesar has become powerful, but how to deal with the man whose authority was built partly outside the Republic's political machinery and whose return now threatens to reorder it. The Senate does not react all at once, yet the pressure becomes unmistakable. Orders are issued, expectations sharpened, and Julius Caesar is required to surrender his command and return as a private citizen, stripped of the military authority that has protected him. While this is framed as a defense of Republican norms, it also serves to weaken him before he can act from a position of strength. At the same time, the balance that once held the triumvirate together has already shifted. Crassus, whose immense wealth had stabilized the alliance, had died years earlier during a disastrous campaign against the Parthians, removing the one figure capable of balancing both Pompey and Caesar. With him gone, the equilibrium collapses, and Pompey gradually aligns himself with the Senate, becoming the central figure around whom opposition to Julius Caesar begins to organize. Under these conditions, returning to Rome would not restore Caesar to neutrality, but would expose him to political and legal consequences that could end his career entirely. What might have been a manageable risk for a lesser figure becomes, for Julius Caesar, a direct threat to everything he has built. There is no safe path left, only different forms of risk. This is what defines the moment. Turning points are often remembered as deliberate, fully conscious choices. Yet, in reality, they tend to emerge when circumstances have already narrowed the available options. By the time Julius Caesar faces a decision, the environment has done much of the work for him. The room for restraint has already begun to close. Rome continues to operate through the language of law and process, but beneath that surface, the conflict has shifted into something more fundamental. It is no longer simply a political disagreement, but a struggle over position, survival, and control in which neither side believes it can afford to yield. Waiting no longer reduces the danger. Each concession invites further demands, and each delay allows opponents more time to isolate him and define his position. What still appears as the possibility of compromise becomes increasingly fragile, leaving Caesar to choose not between peace and conflict, but between accepting decline or acting before the window closes entirely. As this pressure builds, the perception of risk begins to change. What would once have appeared reckless now begins to feel necessary, while avoiding action starts to look like the more dangerous option. That is the edge of decision. When Julius Caesar approaches the Rubicon, he is not simply nearing a river, but a boundary with both legal and symbolic meaning. The Rubicon marked the limit between his assigned province in Gaul and the territory of Italy itself. And Roman law strictly forbade generals from bringing their armies across that line. To do so was to defy the authority of the Republic and to turn political conflict into open confrontation. That is why the phrase crossing the Rubicon has endured. It describes a moment when an action cannot be undone and when the consequences must be carried forward regardless of the outcome. The river itself is unremarkable in size, yet its significance lies entirely in what it represents. When Caesar crosses it with his army, he breaks a boundary that had long maintained the balance between military power and political order. The act is quiet in execution, but absolute in its consequences. Uncertainty remains, but ambiguity disappears. The soldiers who follow him do not require long explanations. Years of shared hardship, repeated success, and trust built through action have already aligned them with his leadership. Their loyalty, forged in Gaul, now translates directly into movement. The effect is immediate. Once the crossing occurs, positions begin to harden. Some resist, others withdraw, and many simply adapt to the new reality. But the space for ambiguity has closed. What had been a contained political struggle now expands into open conflict. Civil war is no longer a distant possibility. It has begun. This is why the Rubicon stands as a defining turning point in Caesar's story. It is not merely the movement of an army, but the moment when accumulated pressure, personal power, and institutional resistance converge into irreversible action. Everything that has been building from the beginning now changes form, as tension gives way to movement and consequence. The system that once shaped Julius Caesar can no longer contain him. Next time, we follow him into the conflict that comes after commitment, where victory will not restore balance and where mercy itself becomes another instrument of power. Next time. All right, what does this leave us with as modern leaders? If I want you to take away only two things from this episode, it would be these. First, pay close attention to situations where your options begin to narrow, because that is often the point where decisions become more reactive than deliberate. As a leader, you should actively create alternatives early, maintain strategic flexibility, and avoid drifting into positions where inaction quietly becomes the riskiest choice. In businesses, in fact, in every organization, this is a common issue, or as one of my business school professors once put it, organizations tend to always only change to the extent that they don't have to transform. And at one point, there are no good options left, and you can only choose between bad and really bad. Don't be that leader. Secondly, once you decide to act, recognize that clarity follows commitment. Teams align faster when direction is unmistakable. So if you reach a point where delay creates more confusion than progress, it is often more effective to make a clear decision and communicate it decisively rather than extending uncertainty. The question for leaders is not only when to act, but whether you can recognize the moment when waiting is no longer neutral. All right, this was it again for today. If this episode resonated with you, whether as a leader, a student of history, or someone curious about why power unfolds the way it does, please subscribe, rate, and share it with someone in your network who would appreciate this kind of perspective. And lastly, if you're interested in more, you can order my book. It has the same title as this podcast, The Mammoth in the Room. It offers a practical roadmap for how great leaders and their teams embrace evolutionary truths for outstanding business results. And it does that in three sections, on people, on strategy, and on implementation. Until next time, lead wisely, think critically, and don't let ancient instincts quietly hijack your modern leadership. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, and this is The Mammoth in the Room. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this content, don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you on the next episode of The Mammoth in the Room.